Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, bienvenue, guten tag. We're feeling rather international. Hello, Rafe, how are you?
Hello, you. And I think everyone can tell that you're in Eurovision mode. You're just about to go off. Where are you going next?
Well, let's see. I'm just back from doing England, Germany, Austria, Hungary, Scotland in 5 days. Which huge things. I mean, basically, the German national final was like a 10,000 seater arena with their leading comedian. It was like the Brit Awards, but it was actually relevant to music.
That's a little unkind.
Oh, come on. Lana Del Rey is a made up fictional character. How could she win 2 years running? That's the Brit Awards, by the way, everybody. Eurovision winner in Germany was Cascada, the Eurodance band from 2007. Kind of says everything. I'm off to Sweden this weekend. Home of Sony Ericsson.
Well, it used to be Sony Ericsson. It's now Sony, but still the home of Ericsson. What people probably don't realise is a fascinating fact to get us back on the mobile track. There's actually Ericsson supplying an awful lot of the network equipment that's used in the UK networks and, of course, around the world as well, along with the Nokia Siemens networks and some of the Chinese companies, Huawei being one, for example. They're providing all the kind of stuff that makes the mobile phone network work. So, yeah, they're a very important part. And actually, Ericsson do some really interesting research into the future of networks, things like heterogeneous networks and smart networks. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, do go and have a look on their website at ericsson.com in their research and white paper section. That's a Swedish fact for you.
I know, and they're probably very happy that we also saw the results of the 4G spectrum auction in the UK, going for significantly less than was expected, 2.34 billion over the five networks, which was estimating 3.5 billion, leaving more money for the networks to buy equipment, have better value for money, you know, just be a little bit more aggressive on price. I know that 3 in the UK have said 4G pricing will match 3G pricing. So although that auction's quite low, I'm actually quite glad to see that, Rafe.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. I mean, for those that don't remember, that the original UK 3G
$22.5 billion
exactly, and of course the operators basically have to get that money from somewhere, and it's from the customers. And so a lower spectrum, I mean, it's bad in one sense because of course all the money goes towards the UK taxpayer, but it's good in another sense. Actually, what it will mean is 4G kind of coverage is likely to ramp up to a larger percentage of the population much more quickly. I mean, O2 also have an obligation, I think it's to cover 98% of the population with one of their 800 megahertz
band. Birmingham and Manchester.
Well, no, it should be a little more than that.
But okay, they can have Leeds as well.
Also, we should get better indoor coverage. I mean, one of the nice things is you've got both a low band and a high band frequency range, in contrast to 3G, which is really just at the high band. So that should mean you get better rural coverage, and also in theory at least you get better indoor coverage. So I think 4G in some ways will be a bigger revelation and happen more quickly than 3G in the UK at least. But I suppose we should try and keep this somewhat international for the rest of our audience. But we're pleased that 4G is going to be arriving late spring, early summer in a meaningful way in the UK. Up until now we've just had everything everywhere, maybe doing a bit of price gouging, but more to the point that just not really a very large amount of coverage yet.
Indeed, yes. And of course, with all those web services and startups, the UK economy will probably see more than that 1 billion that they lost in the auction come back.
Oh, of course. Yes, definitely. Indeed. I mean, I think it's estimated to be about 10 billion. The
20, actually.
20. Okay, great. Kind of link affects the economy. Those numbers always, of course, a bit speculative. It's the analysts and market research people often will come up with those. But it's good news.
It keeps the analysts in a job.
It does. And having had Steve Litchfield post on the site last week, you only need 2G, which actually the point he was making is when devices are in idle mode, a 2G connection is better in the UK at the moment. And that's a lot to do with coverage and things like that. Actually, there's a real prospect that 4G coverage could be good enough that leaving your device in 4G all the time will be best for battery life because of the increased rural and indoor coverage that I was talking about. So actually, I'm very much looking forward to 4G. And of course, I think the biggest thing, I mean, speed gets talked about a lot, and that is great. You can download certain things more quickly. But I think one of the things that people will probably welcome most in day-to-day use is the lower latency. So that means that when you're loading a web page, you'll have to wait less time for it to things to start happening. And even on small web pages, that could have a pretty significant impact. And so, you know, 4G, once it is mature, is definitely worth having, despite all the skepticism you may sometimes hear around it. both from us and from other people.
To be fair, everything everywhere have supplied me with a data sim that I've been using up here in some 4G devices at their cost. So I think this is a disclosure thing that's going in there. And the thing that I notice is that when Virgin Media's internet goes down and I switch a 4G hotspot on, I'm not seeing that much difference on my laptop. It still feels like I'm just browsing the internet as normal. I can still watch YouTube videos and they load at a decent clip. I'm not noticing sort of slow. I mean, you know when you do 3G over your hotspot connection, there's just kind of, wait, and there we go with the page. I don't have that on my PC. So dipping in and out in the smartphone, you don't notice it as much. But when you start really shifting the data around, it's noticeable that 4G is comparable to broadband at home.
Yeah. Now that's interesting. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to being able to get 4G on a regular basis, but I suspect living out in a rural area, I may have to wait a little while.
Yeah, you just got 3.5G, be thankful.
No, I don't. I've only got 2G, but I'm hoping that O2 will cover me under the 98% obligation.
Okay, there we go. So Steve was right. 2G is enough. 2G was also the singer for Norway at Eurovision last year with a song called Stay, bringing us back.
I think we've had enough
topic.
Eurovision, yeah.
Okay, right then. This is great because we did this lovely talk about Ofcom and stuff, and that's not even in our show notes.
Oh, well.
I know. First one says, talk about Steve and this idea that Symbian is still in third place. But again, nice, interesting look at the angle. The argument here is that it's not necessarily the sales in the last quarter that matter. It's how many devices are actually in constant use out there in the world and how many are, you know, not the ones lurking in desk drawers and everything. And I find this really interesting, Grace, because the argument that Windows Phone 8, to bring it back seriously onto topic for www.allaboutwindowsphone.com, that Windows Phone 8 is everywhere is wonderful, but there are so many Windows Phone 7 devices out there, especially the Lumia 800, you know, that I think the balance is still significantly towards Windows Phone 7 and will be for at least the first half of this year.
Yeah, it's difficult to, you know, give an exact number on this because in the kind of latest quarter where Windows Phone did about, you know, 5 million, 5.5, 6 million, depending on which numbers you follow. There's actually no breakdown of Windows Phone 8 versus Windows Phone 7 devices. But given that it launched sort of a month into the quarter, and given that, you know, there's a lot of the Windows Phone 7.5 devices still on sale, and in certain markets, you know, Windows Phone 8 has barely launched. You know, every week we're hearing about the launch of, you know, new markets. For example, I think Brazil and Pakistan went live with the Lumia devices this week. And so a lot of sales will still be on that old platform. So you're right, you know, it's not even as simple as saying, well, it's going to be, you know, 5 million the first quarter, 5 million second quarter. And, you know, given that the installed base, you know, prior to a Q4, I guess it was around 15 million. So we may be getting towards the 20 million mark. You're right. It's going to be a while. And certainly the second half of the year is probably a good estimate, especially when you're considering active devices. But the point that Steve was making, which I think is well made, is that, you know, Symbian, if you look at sort of about 2 years worth of device sales, it's, you know, 100 million devices. If you go back further, you know, 3 years, it's near 200 million. And obviously Android is way out in front on the 2 years timescale. It's sort of over 700 million. iOS, it's over 200 million. And BlackBerry, I think, is around the 50 million mark. So it sort of underlines what a long way Windows Phone still has to go. And so we've seen recently quite a bit of optimism around some of the shipment numbers for Windows Phone, but it's worth bearing in mind that, you know, it takes a while to switch over. And, you know, with Windows Phone, you know, it's had its second anniversary, but, you know, that first year was very quiet, and even last year was a lot quiet, you know. So again, comes back to what we've been saying an awful lot, you know, things depend greatly on what happens in 2013. I do think it's fair to say that the numbers do look to be picking up now, but when you're, you know, looking at, you know, why isn't a developer releasing an app for X, Y, or Z, you know, actually the installed base number is quite an important one, because that's essentially their addressable market. You do have to put some caveats in it. It's about people that are actively downloading apps within that installed base, and actually some ecosystems are better than that than others. A Windows Phone is actually pretty healthy in that regard, more so than Android, but perhaps not as healthy as iOS. So, you know, we get a lot of questions about, you know, what's the health like, you know, how's it doing? And it's just sometimes useful to have a reminder that you can actually stretch these numbers any number of ways. So it's not a simple calculation.
Indeed, yes. But always worth bearing in mind. And of course, this is where having the compatibility and the three choices you have, how to put Windows Phone 7 apps and Windows Phone 8 apps into the Windows Store. You can either have one all-encompassing application, you can have two apps inside the bundle, or you can have two application listings for Windows Phone 8 and Windows Phone 7 devices. It's just something for developers to be aware of, and hopefully it's not going to cause a lot of people just to go, we're just going to code for Windows Phone 8 because it's the newest, because that would be the last thing that we want to see.
Yeah, I mean, and the other interesting point that Steve actually made at the end of this article was talking about, you know, when is Windows Phone, or is it going to overtake Symbian and BlackBerry to become, you know, the third ecosystem? And there's all number of ways of defining either is it becoming a third ecosystem, but actually I think this installed numbers, you know, or installed base number is actually quite a good way of doing it. If you look at where the numbers are going for sales, it looks like it might happen, you know, towards the end of, you know, this year. Obviously a lot depends on sales in the next number, but if one assumes certain things about, you know, Windows Phone probably getting it maybe ahead of BlackBerry, a lot depends on BlackBerry 10. We'll come back to that at the end of the show, I guess. But Symbian certainly is going to fall away over 12 months, and it should, you know, Windows Phone should be in a position to kind of overtake it there. We'll have to wait and see on that one. I talked about this on the All About Symbian podcast, and I sort of said I think it might happen at the end of quarter three, but it could well be quarter four. And I think actually once you get into that position where the installed base number, you know, it will be, you know, heading towards the 50 million mark, for example, let's say 50 million plus at the moment, it's not difficult to see, you know, at least 35 million happening in 2013. It could be, yeah, I think around that's probably not totally unrealistic. So that will then put kind of a different spin on the debate, because I think once Windows Phone gets into that position, you know, it will become harder for service providers and app developers to say, oh, it's a small platform that we don't need to worry about. And honestly, the signs are that that's already happening.
Indeed. And of course, a small platform those days, if we wound it back 3 years, would be 60% market share.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that's one of the big things that has changed. I mean, 2013 will undoubtedly kind of be termed this battle of the third ecosystem, because we've got things like Firefox OS coming in, Tizen, Ubuntu,
Selfish Jolla,
exactly, BlackBerry 10 in a sense as well, and Windows Phone. You know, it's hard to sort of step back from this, but it's hard to see some of those little players having an immediate impact. You know, I don't doubt that they're going to get onto a few devices and they'll have their own following, but Windows Phone will have the advantage of being a couple of years ahead and backed obviously by some very big players, which I think ultimately is what will tell. So I think that question will be answered certainly by the end of 2013.
Mm-hmm. And this comes back to the boutique argument that I always use, which is because you have such a big market now for smartphones all told, that if you have 0.05% of the market share, that still represents could still represent 500,000 devices. Now, that's like the total sales of the Scion Series 3 organizers.
Yeah.
You know, if you're smart, you work with your customers, with your partners, then 500,000 unit sales a year should allow you to do a very small boutique thing. And that's what I think Selfish Joel are looking at. And I think that we're going to see quite a few companies take that route as well. It's not just about the great big all-encompassing number. It's now about creating custom. It's like the difference between a Ford Sierra Cosworth and a Ferrari.
Yeah, no, it's right. I mean, all the attention on ecosystems and smartphones tends to be on the big plays, and obviously they are the most important, especially when you're looking at service providers and app developers. But that doesn't mean there isn't room for, as you say, this boutique level. And it's interesting, you know, one of the challenges I think for BlackBerry 10 is to avoid, you know, falling into that particular categorization as just an enterprise device, just as sort of Windows Phone kind of needs to avoid that, you know, being an addendum to desktop Windows. It needs to have its own character. I think that's something that's been established very well, and I think a lot of that is down to the partnership with Nokia. Suddenly people took it, you know, a lot more seriously. It wasn't just Microsoft's mobile effort, but of course it's tempting just to think of the smartphone market in terms of these big business models, but there is room for innovation there.
Right, let's shift on. Xbox Lives. Wow.
Yes.
I know. I mean, okay, Nokia, to their credit, have continued to keep the Xbox Live brand ticking over, with it's only like three releases every month, but they're blocking all three of them in one day just to go boom, with releases of Zoomer's Revenge, classic EA game, Yahtzee, classic Hasbro game licensed by EA, and Bejeweled Live Plus from PopCap, which is now a subsidiary of EA. But I've got to say, though, very strong games, all noted names, and while I might go, oh, not those, these things again, they're very well put together, and people love playing it. Bejeweled's been around some like 12 years now. Yahtzee, again, you know, I can, we've seen versions of this program by our friend John Holloway back in, back before there was a Scion even, and the stuff that was called before then. Good, strong release titles, admittedly exclusive, which means that they can only reach 80% of the platform instead of 100%. But also we saw another full-blown release of an Xbox Live title, so that's 3 in 3 weeks. Starting to get a bit of hope that we have Xbox Wednesday back again, to be honest. That regular schedule, I think, was one of the best things that Microsoft could have done in 2012 for the gaming, which is every Wednesday, you will get a new game. Now, we know there's releases throughout the rest of the day, all the indie developers and everything, but there was just something about saying Xbox game Wednesday, Xbox game Wednesday, Xbox game Wednesday. You could almost set your diary, but it was really nice to see. That started in the changeover to Windows Phone 8. Hopefully they're over it now. Okay, it's Angry Birds Seasons, and it's an older title. We've all seen it before, but I think the main thing I want to point out here, Rafe, is it's an Angry Birds game. People pick up the handset and goes, does it have stuff that I recognise? And in this case, it does. So I'm actually really glad to see Seasons back again.
Yeah, it's good news. I mean, one of the questions is, as you say, has it got Angry Birds? And I guess this means we've now got all the core Angry Birds titles, and can the original one, admittedly not with the updated levels, but Seasons, Star Wars and Space all kind of get these regular updates with new levels coming in. And yeah, it's a good thing. I mean, I've been playing this a bit. It plays just like it does on all the other platforms. And great, you know, you can get your Angry Birds fix. I have to admit, I've got kind of a little bit of Angry Birds fatigue, having played it, you know, back in the early days on an iPad and also on the web a little bit. But still, you're right. It's good to see this. And Nokia's Xbox releases, you know, it's all part of this agreement with EA, which was 40-odd games coming onto the platform. And you're right, it's interesting seeing them come out as exclusive, and sort of, it, does that matter that Samsung and HTC users can't get them? Yeah, I think it's probably a moot point when Nokia's selling 80% of the Windows Phone devices. But it's probably worth pointing out that most of these exclusives, you know, are exclusive for a limited period of time, usually 6 months.
Yeah, we've seen Mirror's Edge now actually wasn't exclusive. It's now fully available. I think it's about 6 months after the date, which feels about right.
Exactly. And, Bloomberg was an app, you know, great app if you're interested in the financial world and want to get access to Bloomberg content. That's just come out as well. So all of these apps will sort of be effectively coming out of exclusivity in the summer. I don't actually think it's a bad thing, and presumably Nokia has provided some kind of co-marketing or financial incentive for EA to get these games across. And as far as I'm concerned, yeah, it's fair enough if they then get an exclusive period on it. And I think the damage is relatively limited. Obviously, in an ideal world, they'd come across with their own accord anyway. But as you say, these are kind of high-profile titles. And you're talking about Yahtzee. I think that was invented even before there were smartphones and computers. I know it's horrible to think about that period.
Except it was called Poker Dice then.
It was called something else. But, You know, Bejeweled Live, it's one of those kind of, it's a casual game title. These puzzle game titles that are perennially popular on mobile because they do allow kind of snack playing, I guess would be the in term for describing it now, but actually it's sort of short periods of gameplay when you're, you know, waiting for a bus, or you've got 5 minutes while you're waiting for something to cook on the stove, and you know, they really are very good indeed. So I would say all three of those, if you want to try them out, do, because obviously it's the usual trial downloads, and I think all of them are reasonably good value as well.
Yeah, I just want to throw in another thing here about the gaming thing. Having, as we've already hinted here, we have got a BlackBerry Z and we have been playing around with it, partly from the other stuff that I do, but also because it's just nice to see what other stuff is doing. And also looking at iOS as well, I'm shocked when I go into those marketplaces and realize there isn't a trial version. You know, the fact that Microsoft has made a huge play in making sure that almost everything in the store has a trial version, especially all the games, I think needs to be commended.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting. I had this same reaction. Now, to be fair, in both the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store, you will often find there are kind of limited versions of the game available as a free download. But it is a bit of a broken user experience because you have to go and find those specifically. And not surprisingly, you know, the ratings and the place on the charts tends to go to the kind of the full versions of the game. Now, some developers are, you know, getting around that by doing the in-app purchase approach, and I think that works really well. But the kind of the buy and the try buttons in the Windows Phone Store, yeah, they're underrated. But it's like all of these things, you know, when something works well, people sort of don't really, you know, praise it. When things go wrong and they don't like it, they'll complain about it. It's always the critics that are the most voluble. And if you're sort of not getting complaints about something, it probably means there's a good chance you're doing it right. And for me, this is kind of you're right, with these Xbox games in particular, you know, you can download them, you can try them out. And actually quite a lot of them, you can get quite a decent bit of gameplay out of it before having to, you know, switch over to the paid version. I mean, the Angry Birds titles were a good example of this. They had 40, 50 odd levels that you could play before it would ask you to purchase the full game. And actually the Angry Birds titles were fantastic value. I think it's 79p, 99 cents.
And to be honest, they make most of their value when they sell the toys.
Their associative profits are quite significant. I mean, I think it was recently 2 billion. They talked about having driven that many sales, which that's not in downloads. That's in, you know, taking all the revenue from games and clothing and everything else. But yeah, I mean, that's not a business model that works for everyone. But as a consumer, you can actually get access to, you know, a fun game that has, you know, long shelf value because it takes you a long time to get through all of these levels. You may get a bit bored of pinging birds off ice blocks or whatever, but represent good value.
Yeah, and if you'd like to buy your cuddly Rafe Hugby doll at www.allaboutwindowsphone.com /Amazon affiliate store, and we shall sort you out with one. We would need to start a Kickstarter project. We will need a 10,000 investment. We'll give you 20% of the company, and the first doll is free.
That's how you can also get your Tickle Me Ewan doll.
Don't do that. That was rude. Luckily, though, it's not a voice-activated Tickle Me Ewan, because it doesn't have a new Qualcomm chip in it.
Yes, that's a Slinky link.
We have Slinkies as well, by the way. They're branded in either All But Windows Phone colours or... Yeah, that joke's dead. Yeah. Rafe, Qualcomm, quick charge and voice activation. The future of user interface and technology in your smartphone. Although some of us already have it and we don't know.
Yes, that's right. I mean, Qualcomm have stepped up talking about what they're doing. You know, you've probably seen their adverts for Snapdragon in newspapers and magazines online as well. And part of this is they're actually talking more in a consumer-friendly way, sort of, about some of the features in their chipsets. And one of the things we actually wrote about a week ago on the side was Quick Charge 1.0. And this was basically more efficient or more optimized battery charging that's in the current Snapdragon chipsets, including a lot of Windows Phone 8 devices like the Lumia 920, the HTC 8X and the Samsung 8FS. And essentially it allows for faster charging. I mean, what's actually going on is you've got some extra chipsets in the kind of the power bit of this onboard system on a chip. That's kind of the process and all the silicon that goes with it that allows it to charge the battery in a more intelligent way by effectively it will vary the amount of power going into the battery. As a result, what you really need to worry about is it's sort of 45% better than an ordinary battery. It's a bit misleading when Qualcomm talk about this, because actually all of these batteries have this sort of intelligence now on the modern smartphones, and quick charge is just, you know, the way Qualcomm talk about it. But anyone who's used a smartphone so now compared to 5 years ago will know it charges more quickly, and you can typically get 2 or 3 hours and get a full charge. This week they then introduced Quick Charge 2.0, which actually puts the intelligence both in that power management integrated circuitry and actually in the charger on the wall charger itself. Obviously they can talk to each other and it can tell the charger to deliver more power, thus allowing for faster battery charging. And so this will be 75% faster than standard. They talked about testing it on a tablet which charged in 7 hours instead of 3 hours. I think, you know, by the way, I should say there's no guarantee this will arrive on Windows Phone devices, but given that Qualcomm powers all the Windows Phone devices currently in the close connection between Microsoft and Qualcomm and Nokia as well, I think there's a very good chance we'll see this. And Qualcomm say this is going to be delivered first in their Snapdragon 800 chipset device for that, expected to arrive in the second half of this year. And there's a good chance that Windows Phone may well be involved. That's great news. You know, faster battery charging is a good thing. And I actually think it starts to change the way you use the device, because, you know, does battery life become less important? Not it's not unimportant, but if you can get a quick charge from 15 minutes, yeah, it's interesting. So one to think about maybe. The one that kind of caught my attention a bit more was this voice activation technology, and it's essentially it enables you to wake up your phone by just speaking a keyword. So you can say wake up phone or wake up lazy bones, and the phone will come alive, and then actually it connects to the existing sort of voice UI system. So in Windows Phone case, that's Tell Me, and you can star taps, you can do voice dialing or whatever the voice system allows you to do. Now, the contrast to what you currently have to do, where you have to unlock the phone and maybe press the Windows, the home key in and start off the voice control, is you don't have to press any key, so it's completely hands-free. So I think in the car that could potentially be quite a big deal. So, you know, you're driving along and you say phone, it will start up and then say what you get the double beep of the voice interface, and you then say cool Rafe or whatever it is that you want to do. So it is a lot easier to use. I mean, Qualcomm talking about how brilliantly innovative this was. I do actually remember this feature being on the Sony Ericsson P800. It was on a lot of other Sony Ericsson devices and some other manufacturers as well back in early 2000s, I think 2002. It was called the Magic Word, and you could say it and then start the voice dialing process all completely hands-free. So it's not exactly a new idea, but of course you can imagine having your phone always listening for this magic word does actually require a bit of power, and so Qualcomm have actually had to do some fairly intelligent things in terms of making this as low power as possible. So, you know, having the phone always listening, it's not got the full processor running, so it's integrated into kind of the audio part of the system on a chip, and then when it hears it, obviously it will wake up everything else as well as the phone and the platform. But I do like this idea, and it's kind of one of these things that of course phones should work that way. You know, you should be able to say something to it and get it to start up. The fact it doesn't do that now is kind of a failure of interface design. So I'd very much like to see this on a future Windows Phone device.
Are you going to be as unadventurous and call your phone?
Well, yes, I don't know. I mean, one of the things they said in this, the keyword might be end up being set by the OEM, so there could be a lot of people shouting Lumia at car dashboards, but I hope they actually enable it to be something a little bit more interesting. I imagine this could be set in the software, and it will recognise that owner's voice as opposed to somewhere else. There are a bit of a recipe for disaster at this if you use a too common word, but actually most of these systems will actually listen for a word in isolation and will ignore it if it's said in a sentence. So you won't have it starting up if you call it Lumia and start talking about the phone or name it after your cat or something. But it does prove a problem if you yell the cat's name after it's misbehaved, and suddenly your phone will go beep beep and you want to give it voice commands. But it'll be interesting. We'll have to wait and see, obviously, on that one. That particular piece of technology will also be in the Snapdragon 800, and I'm sure it will make its way into Qualcomm's other products. The Snapdragon 800, incidentally, was announced at CES earlier this year. They've also announced a 600 at the same time. The 200 and 400 got announced this week. The 800 will probably be in the highest-end handsets. I wouldn't be at all surprised if that's what's used in kind of the, if you like, the third generation of the Windows Phone hardware.
And the Galaxy S4.
Yes. Well, that's probably going to be the 600, because we've had the HTC One announced this week, and that had the 600. I'm not sure whether the next generation of the Windows Phone ones will be 600 or 800. But of course, all of this technology is kind of integrated into the system on a chip, along with loads of other stuff, all the LTE modems, the sensors, the Bluetooth, GPS, etc. So, you know, in theory, this kind of technology could go into any of those. And if a customer asks for it, Qualcomm will probably provide it.
There you go. And also, it means that your system on chips are almost regional defined. Your 4G chips in the UK won't run over 4G LTE in the US, for example. So you'll need different system on chips again, and we're back to having problems with traveling around the world.
Most of the modem chipsets that do the LTE are actually common. What you sometimes have to do is tune the aerials to one specific band or another. And a lot of the time, that's increasingly been done in software. It's complex area. I don't really want to get into it in too much detail, but actually, surprisingly, compared to a few years ago, there's a lot more commonality in hardware than most people realize. And you know, that's because there's increasing sophistication. When you're talking about these kind of aerials and modems, the modems tend to be common. The aerials sometimes vary, but most of the time you have a high band and a low band aerial, and you'll quite often have two sets of them, one to do MIMO version of it. But it's then just, as Ewan is saying, you do have to tweak it for the different frequencies in different markets. which is sometimes why it's worth keeping a close eye on the bands on the devices. And some manufacturers sort of go try and do everything in one device. Nokia's typically got quite strong, multi-band solutions, but some just run on the exact bands needed or are limited in software. So we won't get into that now, complex topic.
No, we wouldn't want to get you started talking on that, would be great. No. Right, okay, shall we do the classic let's put 30 seconds on the clock and ask Rafe a question about something? Hold on, you ready?
Yep.
Okay, Nokia's Music Plus is starting to roll out. It's now available in the UK as well. This is the future of music. Go.
Well, really, Ewan should be talking about this because he's the music guru on this podcast. But this is the premium version of Nokia's music service, which gives you extra features like unlimited skips, unlimited download of mixes, high quality streaming, as well as lyric support. Its cost is about $3.99 a month. And it's kind of one of these in-between services on the three tiers that you get with these music services. And it's now live in the UK and the USA.
Okay, are you over or under?
Over.
No, you're under 25 seconds. Ah, excellent. 6-4.
Right, well, have you tried this out, Ewan? Because I'm actually interested to hear what you think.
You going to stop
there? I have, but I don't think I need it because I want your expert opinion.
Oh, yeah, you can get it in 30 seconds. I have tried it. My problem with this is twofold. Okay, and they are very personal problems. Let me stress that first. The first is that my taste is not mainstream.
Listen to Eurovision. So there we
yes. go. But you try listening to Eurovision and put that into this, and you don't really get a very good mix coming back out. So part of it is there's a lot of control at the other end of what you're going to be listening to. It's like trying to find a favourite radio station. You've got to try and find a good Music Plus station, and I've yet to find one that really settles with me. There's also the fact that, on a slightly wider scale, Music Plus is great, but it still works like a radio station to a certain extent. So it's very hard to have the licensing rolling out. That's why that has to be. It's £4 a month charge. It does give you infinite skips. That gets over one of my big problems with the mixed radio that there was before, which you can only skip 6 times per hour because that's all you can do in a basic radio license for broadcasting radio online. And again, you can't see what tracks have been played, you can't see what's coming up because of the licensing and everything. It is a good halfway house, and I can see a lot of people using it. But for me, I either want a completely curated experience, which I tend to find in music podcasts, or I want to be in complete control myself so I can call up some really relatively weird obscure tracks. This, for me, is the halfway house of it's not completely curated, but it's still not specific enough for my taste. But I realize that I am a very much an edge case on this one. And that, when you punch in Brit Award winners, for example, if you're in an office today, you will get a very good playlist out of this one. You will get a very good music experience listening. Perhaps the only issue I have is perhaps is when you move up to the subscription service, you actually get higher bandwidth. And better sampling rates of the music coming down, which takes up more data and fills up the cache in your device far quicker. It would be nice to see if that part was throttleable as well.
Yeah, well, one of the things that you do get in Music Plus is you can actually tell it whether you want to have the high quality streams when you're coming over Wi-Fi or whether you're over 3G. So you can kind of turn off that high quality streaming if you want to. I think the point that Ewan makes is well made. I mean, as I see it, there's essentially three kinds of music customers. One who isn't willing to pay for anything, in which case the kind of the free entry level Nokia Music is ideal, and it's actually better than a lot of its competitors because there's no registration required and it's completely ad free. Now there are those limitations that Ewan talked about. This is kind of the next stage up where you get rid of some of the sort of annoying limitations such as the skipping and only being able to download 4 mixes for offline uses. And I think actually that offline download is one of the really strong points of the Nokia Music offering, especially compared to its competitors, where you really don't get that ability. And the fact that Nokia Music is mobile first is a really good thing in this instance. The other thing that I think is notable with the Music Plus is you get this ability to listen in an HTML5 web app. This means you can listen on things like the iPad, Google Android tablets as well, on PCs, laptops obviously. It'll also work on internet-connected TVs as well, on kind of smart TVs. So it kind of enables you to use what you paid for, this subscription, in a much wider environment. That's available through nokia.music.com, and then you click on the Mixes button. You do have to be logged into your account and obviously have an active subscription. I was quite impressed by that. There is room for improvement there. I think custom mixes, for example, need to come into that a little bit more, and maybe the ability to share those custom mixes with other listeners. I suspect Nokia Music over in Bristol, where this has come out of, is probably already working hard on that. And then the third kind of music listener is the Ewan type, who basically wants complete control. And that's kind of the Spotify level of service, that where you can choose tracks on an a la carte basis, make up your own playlists, etc. I wonder whether Nokia will in time sort of launch their own version of that, you know, quite what the naming gets, it would be Nokia Music Plus Gold or whatever. But those three categories of users, and I think the, you know, the top tier is maybe 10%, the middle tier is 20 to 30%, and then the bottom tier, you know, is 60 to 70%, depends how you define these. And obviously that's sort of really on a willingness to pay. But what I will say about Nokia Music Plus, I think it's been really well implemented. Of all of these services that you get on mobile devices, it's one of the kind of the slickest setups. I mean, the fact that, you know, it's an easy upgrade from something that's already on your device is great for consumers. It makes it really easy. All you have to do is go into settings and activate it. And there's a 7-day trial for those who want it. You can pay for it, your credit card, or in where it's supported, operator billing as well. That's nice to see. So, you know, it's a very smooth experience. You know, they actually talk you through the advantages very clearly. And if you want to cancel the subscription, you can easily do so from the device itself. There's some clever things that if you run up against the limits in the free service, it'll kind of prompt you to go up and upgrade, but it's not really nagging you. And you know, things like the lyric support, the high quality streaming, these automatically appear in the Nokia Music app once you've sort of activated the subscription. And I think it's done very well indeed. So of all the Nokia Music services we've seen over the years, of which there have been many, this is definitely, you know, the slickest implementation. It's really clear a lot of thought and a lot of effort has gone into making this as easy to use as possible. You know, I think the only issue Nokia really faces, you know, persuading people that Nokia is a credible brand from which to get their music experience. And I guess for a lot of people there is a trust and loyalty towards the manufacturer and the provider, and it's something that Nokia needs to do because it's a great differentiator. I mean, I think Nokia Music deserves to be considered in the same category as Nokia Maps, as something that makes it really stand out from the crowd.
I wouldn't go as far as that, but it's certainly a strong B-movie, as it were. If you've got an A-movie title in Nokia Maps, then I would say that Nokia Music is your B-movie, your follow-on feature. And Nokia, let's be fair, have had three or four goes at rolling out music services. It's nice to see them finally actually hit what swing for the fences and actually connect with the ball and score a run or two off it. Right. Very briefly, just because I thought this was a cute story, O2 bringing in a one-day price drop on the Lumia 620 because it was the most popular one on Twitter.
On Facebook.
Facebook, Twitter, Hurdle, Pile, MySpace, they're all the same. I just love the fact, twofold, that it engages social media. And secondly, again, it's the 620 that's doing the running. This nice mid to low range handset with a decent amount of internal storage on it, I still think is going to be the one that does all the work in 2013 but doesn't get much of the credit.
I think that's right, and credit to O2 for actually coming up with a very clever piece of social media messaging and stroke marketing stroke sales, and they dropped the handset from
hands up thumbs up
and got us writing about it, so it worked very well. It dropped it from £150 to £120, and that made it absolute stonking value. I wasn't at all surprised to see that this sold out online and also in quite a few of the high street shops, and it disappeared very quickly indeed. And £120 for this Windows Phone 8 handset really is fantastic value. I've already said it on a previous podcast, but I actually think this is the best value smartphone that you can buy at the moment. And of these kind of lower end smartphones, I think it really is a real highlight. I mean, we've talked a lot in the past about how sort of the Android devices are available cheaper, and you can still get them for £70, £50, even less obviously than the 620. But they do tend to suffer, you know, the user experience, the feature set, you know, isn't as good. What's so remarkable about the 620 is essentially you get precisely the same functionality in terms of the software and the experience as you do on the more expensive devices. Now, yes, there are limitations, obviously, screen resolution, the quality of the screen, but actually those are relatively few and far between, especially when you're comparing it to a similar device in its class. So I think it's really a testament to the strength of the Windows Phone platform here that it's able to come up with a device at this price point that is, you know, very competitive. And I actually think it's more competitive at this price point. You know, it's a better comparison than it is at the high end, where I think you can make a strong argument that iOS or an Android handset, you know, is superior to Windows Phone. And it kind of comes back to something I've said before. I actually think Windows Phone is the best platform suited to the average person, whereas a lot of the other platforms do tend to be designed a little bit more with the geek or the tech user in mind. So yeah, fantastic value on the 620 here. And for those kind of wondering about should I upgrade from an old Windows Phone device and not necessarily wanting to splash out on the full thing, the 620 might well be worth a look. But I think more relevant is you've got friends, family who are maybe looking for a smartphone, perhaps even still their first smartphone, or they've had a bad experience on Android. The 620 is definitely one to take them to have a look at, because I think a lot of people will like this. It's got also the hardware that the Express on covers, but really it's the ease of use, getting people up and running with a smartphone. I think it's going to be difficult to beat this year.
Indeed, yes. And of course, Nokia have made sure that it's got 8 gig of storage in it and the internal. Woo-hoo. So it actually works on like the 4 gig. I saw the UIW one, it's only got 4 gig as well. It's like, oh, geez.
No.
Oh, especially as there seems to be an issue with clearing off the cache and the other data inside Windows 4.8 at the moment. Hopefully that's going to be fixed up in the meantime, because it's just eating up space. But more on that possibly over the next couple of days and weeks as we do some digging on that one. Okay, Rafe, I'm off to Sweden this weekend. You're not coming with me to Sweden, which is a shame because I got a spare ticket. You could have came. You could have come and see Army of Lovers return to the public spotlight after 7 years.
I don't know how I'm going to survive without that.
Quite easily?
Yeah, well, probably.
Yeah.
I'm going off to Barcelona instead, to sunny Spain. Well, I hope it's sunny this year. Went 2 years ago and it didn't stop raining. It's like being at home.
Hence the song, you know, the rain in Spain falls mainly on Rafe.
Yes, exactly. Because it was certainly falling in Barcelona. But yes, this is for Mobile World Congress, MWC. You've heard us talking about it in previous shows, and kind of this is the week where the mobile industry goes a bit mad and 70,000 people descend on Barcelona and lots of things get announced. Actually, it's going to be slightly quieter in some media ways than it has been previously, because some companies are choosing to skip announcements. That's Samsung. A lot of them have already announced them. Sony is probably a good example of that. HTC had their event with the HTC One this week. It's a handset I want to talk about in the future because I think it's really interesting. It actually introduces sort of a lot of Windows Phone-like look and feel to the HTC Sense 5 on an Android platform. So kind of an interesting story there. But we do know that Nokia are holding a press conference on Monday morning at 8:30 Spanish time. That's going to be 9:30 GMT. No, 7:30 GMT. Yeah, get it right. So we'll be able to speculate about what they're announcing, but we're also going to probably see handsets from Windows Phone handsets, that is from Huawei, maybe from Alcatel One Touch as well, and who knows, we might see some other things as well. Microsoft aren't holding a formal press conference or anything like that, so there aren't any big Windows Phone announcements expected, but I think we'll see quite a lot of activity kind of around it, and Nokia will no doubt have some service announcements as well. We'll be on the lookout for apps and all that kind of thing, but also of course it's an opportunity to go and look at sort of future trends. I mean, this time around I expect to see quite a lot again around these sort of wearable sensors. It was a bit of a theme at CS, I'm sure it will be repeated at MWC. You know, the likes of Fitbit, I think lots of small companies coming out with that, and Bluetooth 4 becoming more relevant. It'll also be what's known as machine-to-machine stuff. This is the idea of putting SIM cards in, you know, it can be anything from a fridge, boring, to a car, which is a lot more interesting.
You're talking about Bruce Sterling, the Internet of Things, aren't you?
It is that kind of thing. It's particularly relevant to actually machine-to-machine. It's machines talking to each other. So, for example, it might be a car booking itself in for a service. It's not actually doing that. It will be sort of reporting back to a central server. And, you know, there's kind of health applications here as well. The GSMA, who is the kind of industry body that runs MWC, is having a whole connected street and village being demoed. So I think there'll be some interesting stuff out of there. And NFC is going to be another big theme. I mean, again, the GSMA are really pushing this. They've actually come up with an app for Windows Phone, which allows you to use your handset as kind of your entry pass, because one of the nightmares of MWC is always getting in every morning, where there tend to be quite long queues. You have to show photo ID. By using your NFC phone, you'll be able to skip the photo ID requirement. It's not quite perfect, because you're still going to need your card for getting inside the various halls, but hey, it's getting there. And that's actually only on Android and Windows Phone handsets, so we can feel superior to all the iPhone owners for once, sort of. Anyway.
I also, just as a sign, as you said, Microsoft isn't making a big presence, neither are Google. but specifically neither are Android. They're leaving it all to the partners as well. You don't have the Android pins that you can go around and pick up and hope you can sell on eBay later on. There certainly seems to be a sort of drawing back of the major OS licensors to let their partners, in, either in hardware or in software, come to the fore as well this year. Is that something you're seeing in the sort of millions of press releases that you're getting, Rafe? Or
yeah,
just making up something to fill time?
I was going to talk about that. You are starting to see that as well. I mean, it is part of a wider trend that actually companies seem to be preferring to have their own announcements and not necessarily announce things at MWC. And I mean, that's also, I think, in Google's case about wanting to kind of de-emphasize the Android brand and emphasize the Google brand. I mean, that's why there was the shift from the Android marketplace to Google Play. But also it is about, you know, letting their partners do the talking. You know, no one really needs convincing that Android's here anymore. You know, it's arrived. But
I think Steve does.
I guess it means that, you know, there'll maybe be less talk about Android specifically and more about Google handsets. And it's kind of something we've seen in the high street anyway. People are buying Google handsets. Not, I don't know. I think you can overplay that. And I think, you know, for Microsoft, you know, they've got some strong hardware partners, particularly in the form of Nokia. So, you know, before they kind of had to be there to talk about it, they'll have people talking about it there. And if they haven't got a big announcement to make, you know, not going to spend, I mean, they're still going to have a stand, so they'll still be present at the show, but they're just not doing a press conference. We do expect to, I will be having a briefing with some of their executives, so if you've got any questions, send them in and I'll make sure I get them asked, and the same applies to Nokia. But I guess what people probably want to know is some speculation on what Windows Phone-ish stuff we're going to see. Well, I've already mentioned,
I better make something up then.
Huawei. I think we'll probably see the W2, maybe the W3, so a couple more handsets from them, maybe just one. We'll have to wait and see on that one. Alcatel OneTouch, they've just done their first Windows Phone device, so they'll be showing that off. I think there's potential to see another one. Just had a press release in from them saying they're going to be showing off 30 new smartphones. These are always a little bit misleading because they tend to talk about new smartphones, and it's actually ones they've already announced at CES. LG is particularly good at leaking things in advance. But I guess the one that people want to know about is Nokia. I mean, they are the dominant Windows Phone player at the moment. I think you can probably do some fairly informed speculation now. There's been some leaks in server logs, but even without those, you can look at what's come out so far on Windows Phone 8 and go, there's something missing in the 5 and the 7 series, so I would expect to see something named 520 or similar and 720 or similar come out to kind of fill those gaps in the pricing tiers. And so we may well see a device even cheaper than the 620 come out at MWC, and 720 would sort of obviously be somewhere in the middle. And I definitely think there's room for a kind of mid-tier handset. Kind of the more interesting question is, will we see something, you know, at the high end? You know, there's been speculation about Verizon, for example, taking a higher-end Windows Phone handset from Nokia. I would be surprised if that had got announced at MWC, just because, you know, Verizon, the US company, I would imagine they'd be more interested in doing something themselves or at a US-based event. But we'll have to wait and see. There's also, of course, inevitably speculation around PureView, and will we see kind of the 808 version of Windows Phone this year? Difficult to say. I mean, there's no doubt that Nokia is working on something like that. They're always working to improve their cameras. Are they doing a camera-specific device? I actually think it's pretty likely. Will we see it at MWC? I guess I'll stick my head above the parapet and say unlikely, but I was proved wrong about the 808, which was a Symbian device last year. The reason I think that is actually the current hardware for Nokia's Windows Phone devices doesn't really support the high-end megapixels required to do the kind of the 808-like PureView thing. That's going to have to wait until kind of the third generation of hardware, I think. And also just thinking about the timescales. But Nokia have been moving very quickly, so there is a chance we could see something in between. And, you know, they have tended to announce, you know, two big flagship devices a year, and it has been almost, you know, 6 months since the 920 got announced. So it's not out of the range of possibility that we will see some variation.
And they could go the HTC route. They could have another chip that will deal with the big image processing and then pass that over to the camera, the same way the HTC did with the Titan 2 and the 12 megapixel.
Yes, yeah, there are all sorts of ways you could implement this.
You could put a little bit inside it running Symbian OS just to handle the imagery, because they've got it all worked out now, haven't they?
Yes, well, I'm not sure they go quite that approach. But, you know, it's one of the interesting bits of speculation. But I would say don't be surprised if you don't see something like that, if it's, you know, just a couple of mid-tier handsets. What I do expect to see is some more kind of service-type announcements. You know, obviously, the Nokia Maps team tend to work on a six-monthly cycle. They're actually due to talk about their next set of updates. I think that will be things like My Commute coming to Windows Phone 8, as well as some other features as well, potentially. The Nokia Music Plus service has just launched. That will almost certainly get talked about. You wonder whether there'll be anything else around that and what's coming next there. Nokia Reading has been pretty quiet recently, so there may be some updates there. Nokia Play 2, which is the way you can play media back on other devices via UPnP, that will be coming out for Windows Phone 8. That's actually been pretty clearly said in the Nokia Beta Labs forum, so that'll be one to watch out for. And there's always a chance that, you know, there'll be something unexpected. You know, it's always difficult to speculate about these things, but one of the missing pieces from Windows Phone at the moment is a way to get video content onto it and TV content. So I wonder if there's perhaps some room from innovation around there. I suspect that's probably a longer bet, but you never know. Nokia clearly looking at services quite carefully and are putting money in certain places, but of course it's a big commitment to do anything like that, and there's all kinds of license rights and things around that. But I'll certainly expect there to be something of interest in that area.
Samsung,
yes.
They obviously, they'll probably want to keep the powder dry Android-wise, but can we see them bumping up the A-Tiv range?
It's entirely possible. I mean, Samsung have been pretty quiet. I mean, they've had the Odyssey going on to Verizon, and it would kind of make sense if they did, you know, another handset, maybe one that's either mid-tier or lower, and they don't have a formal press conference, so it's kind of be a bit of a surprise if they did something. But, you know, it's always open to kind of, you know, new things like that. You were talking about Android. That's not going to happen. They've sort of quite clearly said that the Galaxy S4, which is of course the really big handset for them, is going to come in March, probably around the 15th or so.
Basically, they're going to let HTC fill up the entire stock line with all the HTC One devices. And just as they're about to go on sale and HTC have committed all their stock and cash, the Galaxy S4 will be released. That's my reading.
It'll be announced, certainly. Yes, I mean, it's the usual things going on there. You know, but nonetheless, it's kind of a sign of what we were talking about earlier, you know, manufacturers moving away from doing big announcements at MWC. You can see why, because they have to compete for, you know, space against everyone else. Then it is worth mentioning, I think, the Chinese manufacturers, and it'll be some of these smaller guys that maybe will get a bit more attention. And when I say small, it's actually all relative, because they're breaking into the top five. And this is why the likes of, you know, Huawei, Lenovo, TCL, which in the West is sort of branded Alcatel OneTouch, are all kind of interesting. And I think, as I mentioned, you know, a Windows Phone handset from Huawei is a distinct possibility, as is another one from Alcatel OneTouch, and maybe Lenovo. There's also, you know, other Chinese OEMs who have said to be working on Windows Phone devices, CoolPad's one example. And you never know what may break. I mean, this is one of the things that's nice about MWC. You do get these surprises. So I would say keep an eye on that sort of thing. It's also going to be the debut for things like Firefox. There'll be some demos of Ubuntu. I think Jolla will probably be at the show. Whether they've got anything particular to show off, I mean, they've said their handsets later in the year, but certainly demos of the platform. The other thing that I think will be of interest to our listeners is, you know, you always see kind of the early signs of some of the cool technology that's, you know, coming in or will come in later in the year. I've got one specific example to talk about from what's gone before. You kind of know that the 920 Nokia's Lumia handsets have this ability to use gloves when you're using touchscreen. It's actually super sensitive touch. It's actually from a company called Synaptics, and I can remember seeing the demo of that a few years ago at MWC, and obviously Nokia licensed that technology, put it in their handsets. But there'll probably be things like that sitting around the show floor, and if you know where to look for them, and you're lucky and run across them, because it is a huge area and trying to cover it as one person is virtually impossible, especially as there's multiple events and press conferences going on at the same time often. But one that I've got a press release about, which I want to go and see, is actually a firm that's putting a bit of a solar charger into the screen matrix. And so, you know, it will actually allow a certain amount of charging to go on, you know, just as the light that's going through your screen. Now, obviously, that won't be able to fully recharge the phone, but it might be able to provide a trickle charge and keep it running on idle a bit longer. So it's exactly the sort of technology that we could see coming in a few years' time. There's also any number of nano coatings. These have become popular in the last few years, the things that make your phone waterproof, and actually they're stepping up to the next generation. They're becoming oil and dirt proof, so those would be worth checking out. And as I say, machine to machine and also software defined networks, that kind of side of things, microcells, they're always a part of the show at MWC. I'll try and be concentrating on the consumer side, but be giving you a full flavour. And if you want to kind of follow along, there'll obviously be news on the site that will be more of a Windows Phone bent. Although I think anything that's interesting, I'll try and get some flows up about that. But I'm also going to be in town with my colleagues from the 361 Degrees podcast, Ewan McLeod and Ben Smith. And we're actually going to be recording little shows every day to kind of give you a flavour of MWC, talk about some of the cool things that we've seen. And those will be available on the 361degreespodcast.com. We'll also feature them on the All About Windows Phone website. But that, you know, if you can't go to MWC, we'll do our best to make it feel like you've at least had a look around the show floor, and we'll talk about some of the trends and the cool technologies that we see, as well, of course, all the handset news and things like that.
And if you want to replicate the experience, if you stand in front of your kitchen door for half an hour, if you just stand in the shower with the water running, and then when you're walking in the street, just have somebody casually steal your wallet and your laptop out your bag, and you'll probably be just about there as well.
Yes, yeah, Barcelona does have a bit of a bad reputation for pickpockets and that sort of thing, but I will say it's one of my favourite cities to go and visit. You get good food, you get generally good weather. And it's always a pleasure to see so many of my colleagues, both in the industry. You also get a lot of mobile bloggers coming along, and of course all the people working for the various mobile companies. So it is kind of a bit of a party atmosphere sometimes, but I think it's going to be all work for me this year.
Oh, you socialite, you. You know what you need? You need somebody else on the website who could come out and help you.
Yes, yeah, no, we've always talked about this, but Ewan's busy in Sweden this year.
Indeed, I'm busy every year. Yay me! Because Ulrich Munther's singing as well. Okay, very briefly, can we change app of the week to software of the week, Rafe?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, you go first.
Software of the week. Quick, I need to think about this. I should have probably
put something in the show.
Okay,
notes.
I know what I can do. Yes, Nokia have an official MWC app, which has everything that you'd expect in it. Yeah, ooh, that was close. It's a list of the exhibitors, the agenda, and all that kind of thing. So if you're actually attending the show, it's kind of an ideal companion. Even if you're not, it'll probably give you a flavour of just as scared of what's going on. But one of the things that kind of caught my eye, they've integrated some of the Nokia apps, and so you can dive straight into Nokia Maps, for example, getting location. Nokia Drive will give you the instructions to get to the venue. But my favourite one is using the kind of app-to-app API features in Windows Phone 8. They've actually linked straight into a Nokia Music mix of Spanish music, so it can kind of get you in the mood for going to Spain. So I'm going to make sure I have that downloaded for offline mode for listening to on the plane on the way to Barcelona.
Aha, now this is different to the official Mobile World Congress application, which is also available on Windows Phone, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Now, did you check both of them, and did you decide to go for a specific manufacturer for any reason, or did you just go the one that was at the top of the list?
I've actually downloaded both of them, and the Nokia one takes a while to open, but when it gets there, actually, I found a bit easier to use and has some of those extra features that I was talking about that will come in handy. I've set up my sort of list of agendas and exhibitors I want to go and visit in that app, so it's therefore kind of become my default. But I will be using the NFC badge app, which is from the GSMA, as I described earlier in the podcast.
Okay, when you listen to that Nokia radio music mix, can you keep an eye out for a band called El Sueno de Morfeo?
Yes, I will, Ewan.
Thank you very much. I'll ask you about that next week. Right now, software of the week for me. I'm going to be sneaky here. BlackBerry 10. Don't go her. We should be looking at these other things, right? Should, because yeah, it's important to have everything in context. Yeah. I'm actually sitting here with the Z10 for the last couple of days now. And it's intriguing because it's kind of like where Windows Phone 7 was. But it has strengths in some areas and weaknesses in others. And it's got this lovely gesture-based user interface. So, you know, there's no button on the front of the screen. You know, there's a power button at the top. You've got your four buttons at the side, but there isn't a home button or a back or a search or anything. The top of the device is completely clean. it's just always got the touch sensor running. So you kind of have to do the first half of the McDonald's logo to bring up all your email messages and your BlackBerry Hub stuff. And I just find this approach really, really interesting, that rather than go for the grid approach that is familiar with iOS and Android, BlackBerry have also decided that they're going to move away from that. Yes, there is still your 4x4 bank of applications, but the main interface, your task manager, your the key raison d'etre for BlackBerry, your messaging, they've tried to do something different. And I like that they've done that. But like Windows Phone, well, actually, Windows Phone 7, it's like Zune. It's not quite there yet. It needs another iteration or so. But I don't think BlackBerry have enough reserves to actually iterate this as much as Windows, as Microsoft have done on Windows Phone.
Yeah, I've been using a BlackBerry 10 for just brief periods. I kind of came to the same conclusion. I actually, think a lot of what they're doing isn't particularly that different to what's gone before. But for those that have used an N9, that's a Amigo device from Nokia, kind of that got dead-ended, really. It feels a lot like that, and actually it's very gesture heavy, the software platform. You don't have to use them for most things, but for some things it is kind of essential, including what Ewan was just describing, that kind of startup or activation process. And I actually think it's too gesture heavy. The learning curve on it is a bit too extreme. Maybe being a bit skeptical there, but I kind of feel like gestures are a bit like keyboard commands. The power users love them and they're great, and personally I really like the idea of being able to use them. But when you look at the way people use their mobile devices, a lot of people don't use them. They want something a bit simpler, easier to understand. So I think there may be an issue there. Some of the other innovations they've done, like Peek, which is basically a way to kind of see things without fully going into an application, I really like the idea of. But most of the time, actually, the difference between switching into an application and seeing it really doesn't make a lot of difference. So I'm not convinced about the time saving there.
To get the Peek screen up to see, so briefly, the BlackBerry Hub basically holds, is like the People Hub. It holds all your messages coming in from email and stuff. To peek at it, you swipe up. And to actually open up, you swipe up and then do a little tiny switch to the right. So there's not that much of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, the idea, of course, of Peek is that you can look at things without having to, and decide you don't need to without having going into them. But, it's an interesting one. I mean, I do agree with you in that the idea of getting rid of buttons, I think, is really intriguing. I think ultimately that's probably the way things are going. But are people really ready for this? What kind of pleasantly surprised me was BlackBerry did a very good job on the software overall, I think, as well as they could do. But I do agree with you, and it may need an iteration or two, and whether BlackBerry have time for that, I'm not so sure. And the hardware is good, but it's not great. And for a £450, £500 device, I'm not sure that's enough. You compare it with something like the Lumia 800, which at its time, really stood it out, was, clear identity. And I think you can say that about all of Nokia's Lumia devices, even the second generation Windows Phone 8 ones. That's partly the strong kind of visual identity that Nokia has. The Z10 doesn't feel so much like a BlackBerry device of old, and that's I think that could be a bit of an issue. And it's interesting because BlackBerry are going to be this challenger, if you like, for the third ecosystem spot. I think they're going to do well, but I'm not sure they can sell enough devices to be kind of sustainable as a company in the long term, because I think a lot of the underlying issues are still there. But it's one that's certainly going to be watching, and I think a point you made in your editorial is there is a lot of love for BlackBerry in the room, and you had a editorial on the site about this, didn't you, Ewan?
Yes, it's very interesting, because even if you assume that WP7 and BB10 have a similar starting point, the fact is that the BlackBerry, for many writers, especially in the US, was their first love. And while they've moved on, and while they've picked up Android devices, they've picked iOS devices, when somebody goes, BlackBerry's back again, it's got a new outfit, looks a bit sexy, and they're kind of going, oh, yeah, remember that, you were really nice, you still look nice, yeah, I've got Android and iOS now, I'm going to stick with them, but, you're looking good. And when they look at Windows Phone, they just go, you're Microsoft.
You're evil.
Yeah, you're evil, you bullied me.
I think it's much the same way that Nokia is viewed in Europe. There's kind of a soft spot for it. And, that's why it was such a good thing for Windows Phone when Nokia came, quite apart from all the other reasons. But you don't get that in the US so much with Nokia. some extent maybe, but much, much stronger with BlackBerry. And given the kind of the dominance of the US media and tech reporting, you know, it could have an impact on perceptions. But, you know, it as I say, it's an interesting one. We'll probably talk about this a bit more, because I do think there's a lot that both platforms can learn from each other. And some of the things that BlackBerry have done, I think, are very smart indeed. I just want to talk about one other bit of software, since we're doing software of the week. I was at the HTC One launch, like Hugh was saying, actually really to be able to comment on anything in mobile, you really need to have a broad knowledge of all the platforms, which is why we all have Android and iOS devices, and some in devices, of course, if Steve's listening to this. And yes, I'm still using my device. Actually, I'm going to be taking the 808 as my kind of smart camera to MWC. But one of the things that caught my eye with the HTC One was something called the Zoe camera. And it's, you know, there's various bits on the camera which we won't talk about in this show, maybe in the future. They've actually gone down to a 4-megapixel camera, gone to ultra pixels, basically bigger pixels, which I think is also a very interesting approach, quite brave from a high street point of view, but the right thing to do. But Zoe is effectively another mode for taking pictures. You know, we at the moment have videos and we have stills. In the HTC One, you get Zoe mode. And in Zoe mode, what the phone does, it records a 3-second video and actually starts recording the video just before you press the shutter button, and obviously for a little bit of time afterwards. At the same time, it's capturing 5 still images a second. So you end up with 15 still images and a video. And you can obviously go through those pictures. You can pick out which one you want to use and send that off as a kind of individual still frame. And then you have this kind of Zoe photo on your phone in the gallery. The gallery comes alive because you've got a bit of video going on. It looks really effective. It's kind of a bit like Harry Potter images, or that's how it's described to me at the launch. I think it's a nice way of doing it. It's kind of a bit like the effect that Nokia are trying to achieve with Cinemagraph, a very
which
different approach.
Which they also called the Harry Potter effect.
Indeed, which just goes to show how difficult it is to come up with an effective name. And you can do very similar things to what you can do with the Nokia lenses on Windows. And you can choose which one from a series of pictures. You can put smiles in, you can remove objects and stuff like that. So, you know, kind of some interesting stuff going on there. And then in addition to that, which I think the idea of having a new mode in camera is really intriguing. I really like the idea of that, especially as the storage space and processing concerns have gone away. You know, getting the best photo out of that much better, quite apart from having kind of a more interactive experience that's more like a memory when you're capturing something. They also have what's called the Zoe Highlight, and this actually takes pictures, and it can be video, still images, as well as these Zoe captures, and combines them into what's a highlight reel, and it's set to music and sometimes an effect put on it. And I was very, very skeptical when I first heard about this. This isn't going to work at all. Anything that's automatically generated, no, that's not going to work. But actually seeing it in action, it's really very effective indeed. It's the sort of thing I'd love to see elsewhere. I mean, HTC have already said they're not going to be putting this on their Windows Phone devices, which is a shame, but it's actually kind of the downside of having Microsoft control the platform so strongly centrally. But this was really effective, surprisingly so. You know, it was able to pick up breakpoints and videos and pictures and sort of get it exactly right, and it looked like it'd been human edited. Really quite remarkable. So when it does come out, you know, I'd recommend people go and look it out, because I think that's something that we'll probably see spread throughout devices in the future. But HTC you know, done a particular bit of innovation which I think is admirable.
Indeed. It's nice to see them going. I think they will have a limited success. I don't think they're going to break out of the sort of second division of handsets, though.
Yeah, well, this is a problem that HTC face. It's kind of almost one of scale. You know, they're facing off against the Samsung in the Android world, and it's very hard to fight against the kind of the power of Samsung's marketing budget and also their research and development budget for handsets. I mean, the One X and the Samsung Galaxy S3 are a great example of this. I actually thought the One X and the One S were very strong handsets, and certainly you could make an argument why you get that over the S3, and I'd have actually recommended the One X because I thought it was a better bit of design and hardware. But we all know that the sales of the S3 completely blew away HTC, and actually HTC are also facing a similar problem against Sony, where it's kind of the strength, I guess, of the brand name and the associate and the perception. And this is, you know, HTC, remember, used to be the king of Android, and actually in some ways the king of smartphones. It was a very strong company. And similarly in the Windows Phone world, it's facing off against Nokia. You know, we talked about last week about the numbers. HTC, you know, are maybe 10% versus 80% of the devices being sold for Windows Phone, with Nokia obviously in the dominant position. I'm not sure there's any easy way out of this. You know, they have to keep producing great hardware. And with the One, they have done this on the Android side. It really is very strong. You know, the same actually could be said about the A-Tech. That was a very strong handset. The benefit on the One is actually they put some investment into differentiating on software, which is something they didn't have on the A-Tech. So I think they've got more of a chance there. But a lot is going to depend on, you know, how operators take it up. You know, can they get the marketing right? And it is hard to see, you know, how you do that against a kind of a giant like Samsung. But you know, if I was recommending an Android handset based on the ones I've seen so far, I would recommend the One. But as Ewan did say, there is another Samsung Galaxy handset coming out soon, and there'll be a whole bunch at MWC as well. So I guess I'll have to revisit that pronouncement in the future.
Indeed. And if I had to recommend right now, I would probably look at one of the Sony Xperias, to be honest.
Yes, yeah, the Z is particularly.
We're turning into all about Android now.
Yep. Well, we like to do some more generic coverage as well. And if you don't like that, write to us and, you know, say nasty things in the
right
email.
At the end, so if they've stopped, they've not missed any stunning news.
It's true. Yes, you can skip all of this bit, and we'll get back to our usual app of the week. Almost certainly won't be next week because we're going to have plenty to talk about from MWC. Might even have Ewan recording a special edition Insight podcast without me, but because I'm going to be away in Barcelona for
that.
So that'll
be 10 minutes long.
Yeah. Thanks, Ewan.
You're welcome.
But otherwise, we'll certainly have one the week after MWC, and you'll be able to hear all about my views and opinions from there. But as I say, don't forget to listen to the 361 Degrees podcast as well.
Do you overrun on those ones as well?
No, because Ben's much nastier, and because we're in the same room, he can sort of look at me and glare when I'm talking too much, which is most of the time, to be fair.
Ah, glaring. Okay, you should try that one next time. Anyway, next time, of course, you'll find the podcast in the same place, allaboutwindowsphone.com. Comments are welcome back on there. I think that's about it, really, for the links out. We didn't really mention any apps, so we can't really link to them, but MWC app you'll find in the store. Always great to see your comments, your emails, your Twitters. Rafe, best social network to follow you on next week while you were around MWC would
It'll
be Hurdle Pile.
On Twitter. Twitch. You can follow the All About Windows Phone stuff at @AAA_WP and me personally at Rafe Blandford. As I say, I will be getting things up on the site as well, hopefully. Yeah. As
First
well as the team back in the UK, Ewan will be doing his usual fantastic job keeping all the press releases and news and regular content flowing as well. So keep an eye on all of that. And you'll be able to follow, of course, in the AAWP app, which you can download from the Windows Phone Store. But we really should stop talking now because we're an hour and 10 minutes. We've overrun by about half an hour on this podcast, but hopefully it's been worthwhile because it's been a while since we did the latest one. Okay, me, I've overrun. I'm bad. I've talked too much. Any complaints, direct them at Rafe @allaboutwindowsphone.com.
Glare.
Woohoo.